back in the ship, once again having departed for a little bit too long, but we're back now. We're going to try to entertain you again for another half hour or so. As usual, the Merry Bandits are here. Let's start with Matt. How you doing, man? How are things up in the Great White North?
Things are good. Weather's just all over the place these days. You know, some days it's 20 degrees above zero. Next day it's 10 below.
Celsius, just of course.
Don't
know
what you'll get. Celsius, yes. You know, things are good. Busy as ever. Conference season's going to be starting up soon. Already got a few trips planned there. But yeah, can't complain. How about you, Joe?
It's been good. I actually just had sales kickoff followed by a week of PTO. So like heavy work to light-ish work being somewhat unplugged. Cause I'm absolutely terrible at leaving things alone and disconnecting. But, honestly, it's been great kind of finally getting into the swing of things this year and getting to the point of having a more normal schedule for both work and community projects and some of the stuff that I'm doing on the side. Like we're finally getting our mental health program moving with more people volunteering to help on the stuff for the dads group.
That's awesome.
So it's been cool to make progress in what I feel like are actually meaningful things, not just the daily grind. What about you, Jim? What you got going on?
So the first thing I got going on is nothing but pride for you, Joe. I'm so proud of you, dude, with all the mental health stuff that you're doing. And I do want to kind of lead with that. But since you asked about me, I'm a pretty happy guy right now. So I have been trying badly, very badly. I found at 48 years of age, it's a very hard time to try to say, hey, let's start study for a new certification. And this morning I finally passed my AWS Solutions Architect Associate, which doesn't sound like much, but oh my God, the content for that freaking test.
Congrats.
So that was fun.
Good job.
Speaking of going off the grid, so the last 3 months have felt like a sprint, and I was supposed to go once my kid's spring break starts Friday all the way through the next week. We were supposed to go to the campground. The weather in West Virginia is as bad as the internet right now. So as all, you know, as all good people say, well, when it's bad, let's go to Florida. So this is what I'm doing next week now. We're going to go Disney adjacent, but not actually Disney. But I am looking forward to warmer weather, shorts, you know, showing my hairy self in places that I probably should not. And going to have a good time.
Those places being Florida, that's what you meant, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm going to be Disney Springs adjacent, for those that know the general area, which, by the way, you know, Florida and Disney are no longer, you know, fighting. They're now besties again. They settled their grievances today. So, you know, I look forward to that.
I can't process that. All I heard is Jim is going to be Disney moist in Florida. That's all that came out of that.
You, sir, do not lie.
Anyway.
You're not wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, Brian, my friend, how are you, sir?
That's what I'm here for, is to herd the cats as usual. Yeah, things have been good. You know, new job is going well. I'm happy with where I ended up at, starting to fit in, starting to do real work, getting the support I need, which is awesome. I love learning something new. So it's been really enjoyable from that front. Otherwise, things are pretty stable, fairly quiet. You know, until, you know, refrigerators break and dumb stuff like that gets in the way of life, but otherwise living life pretty good right now. Pretty happy with that. One thing
that's awesome.
That I am super glad for is you know, a company that's super lax or flexible. That's the right word. Flexible when it comes to, you know, the work side of things. So having some good flexibility to, you know, take time off. When my daughter had her spring break, I did kind of a 50-50 split during that week. So there's a lot of good stuff there. Sure beats going into the office every day. Which brings us to our first topic for today.
Absolutely.
We want to talk a little bit about the return to office movement that's happening. Obviously, a lot of people got used to working from home, and a lot of the bigger companies realize, hey, we've got a lot of office space that's empty. Let's start filling it back up and torture our employees by making them come back into these open office workspaces that make work horrible, in my opinion. I've worked, you know, a week at a time in an open office space that was really fairly well contained, in my opinion. So that, you know, we weren't in a giant warehouse with no walls and nothing but desks everywhere, tabletops, really. And even just having to share a semi-secluded room full of tables with, you know, 6 to 8 people at them is far too distracting for me. I couldn't deal with it because looking at the hallway where people are walking around is distracting. And I'm the type of person that I can't stand to have my back to the hall where everybody's walking, is even more distracting for me. So I literally shared today with one of my coworkers who, goes into the office a couple days a week. And so we were talking about this concept, and I found a nice picture that demonstrated how I would have to deal with an open concept, which is literally a person hunched over in front of their monitor with a blanket over top of both of them. And of course I made the point of there's noise canceling headphones cranked as high as they can go underneath of there. I can't have that. That just doesn't work for me. So unfortunately this is becoming a trend. And we see it with a lot of the big ones, particularly in the last, I don't know what, 6 months or so. You know, I worked in the cubicle farm in the past, and that was too distracting for me. Like, I need walls at the very least. And as much as I made the best of commuting time to just kind of decompress and, you know, be by myself and listen to podcasts and, you know, hopefully not get road ragey, I could not go back to that. I don't know about you guys.
Yeah. I mean, Brian, I'll jump on that bandwagon. So I'm what, 25 years into my IT career at this point. And for the first 10 of them, I never really had to share an office. It was always, that's how I kind of grew into it. And, or actually probably almost the first 12 or 13. And then the agency that I was working for went to an open concept, and I was in a cube, and even the cubes that they had, the top, they were 4 foot of solid and then glass above that. And I literally referred to my cube as the fishbowl. It was right at the main drag where everybody walked past. And, you know, I'm one of those ADD multitaskers. So I had 4 monitors rolling, and I would have 4 different things going. Some of them were work-related, some of them weren't. But it's how I had to keep my brain focused, and comments would get made. And so that led to me, like, taking the extreme circumstance of saying, you know, I'm going to build a house designed around the idea that I will work from home, and I'm never going to not do that again. And, you know, it's wild to see. The middle of the pandemic, we saw this big shift towards, we've got to do whatever we can to keep the employees with us, you know, especially the good ones. And now, I mean, frankly, now that money is not as cheap and these companies are on the hook for a whole lot of real estate, to just flip a switch and say that doesn't matter as much is just absolutely wild to me. What about you, Joe? What do you think?
Oh, man. Yeah, I spent the majority of my career in an office, and most of them were absolutely terrible cube farms with, you know, smelly particle board walls amongst everybody, and you could hear all the folks whispering and gossiping all the time. It drove me bonkers. I wish I could have gotten away with wearing, you know, a duster or a blanket or just a gigantic pillow fort on my cubicle, but apparently that was quote unprofessional. So, you know, I couldn't fathom going back to it. I do miss a little bit of the interaction with folks when I got to having a handful of really good teammates, but it was because of the fact that we got in the office literally hours before other people, had our crazy discussions, had our arguments about whether problems were, you know, DNS or network related or systems issues or storage or whatever. whiteboarded out all of our crazy things that we wanted to do and tested stuff and pretty much got all of our work done before the rest of the team was in the office, and spent the rest of the day just kind of counting down until when we could escape that place, because it was a terrible just mouse trap for everybody in there.
I don't know about you guys, but right now I'm imagining Joe with a wall of pillows busting through it every time he needed to go talk to somebody and just yelling, "Oh yeah!"
I mean, Brian, I mean, there it is. I mean, one of us, you know, has like a corollary to Kool-Aid yep. Man. And I mean, it just goes there. I can't lie. But I mean, Matt, I'll tee you up here in just a second. But I think if I could like kind of go back into it for a second, you know, the thing of it is different people need different things. Like I know people, especially here in tech, like very, very visible people that do not function outside of an office. You know, one of my very good friends that Matt works with, the guy was the only one in COVID that was going to an office because he just could not work mm-hmm. at home. And that's fine. If that's what you need, that's great. Right. But in the year of our Lord 2024, there is no reason why we can't have a little bit of diversity. The ultimate kicker that got me was like literally the week before I left my state government job, our director looked at me and said, "Look, I'm going to be taking away the one day of work from home that you've got, because if I can't touch you, I can't manage you." We've got to be past this at this point, people.
Well, and
you know, I don't think that's it. 90s.
You make a great point of no.
That mode of managing didn't work in the 90s. That was my second job was they didn't care what you did. Literally, there was a guy in my row that would sleep almost every day at his desk. They didn't care because he was there at 8:15.
Well, you're there.
And he was there at 4:30 when people would walk by. And punching that was it.
So, Brian, the day that I turned in my resignation at that job, my Voldemort in that office, who was, you know, the old crusty IT guy that sat in the cube across from me, I turned in my resignation, and I guess the word got out. And I'm just sitting there just chilling, and all of a sudden I hear him talking to one of our other coworkers saying, "I told them they shouldn't let him have those certs. They shouldn't have, you know, he was just going to go," and all this kind of stuff. And I'm like, I literally just spoke to him and said, "Ed, I'm right fucking here." And he's like, "Oh, I didn't know you were there."
And I'm like, "Hi, Jim. Nice to meet you.
This is why I went out of this office. This is quintessential." I mean, I loved working at that place. There was good people, but it was like, after a certain point, it's like, and I'm an extrovert.
You need
your
space.
I need people. But if I have people, I'm going to talk.
That's what we love about you on this podcast, Jim.
You know, yeah. I'm going to...
No.
But yeah, I mean, it's the, you know, there's... what I'm trying to get at is there are different people that have different needs for where they work, how they work, when they work, all those kind of things. And there's no reason why we can't have accommodations. You know, everybody's going to come back to the office. I'm like, find a different way.
Well, I mean, what blows my mind is, was it Dell who came out and basically said, those who are working remotely are not eligible for a promotion?
Yes. I mean, there's just as many companies that are hurting themselves on not allowing their talent pool to be anybody that can't be in their office 3 days a week.
Yeah, there's a lot of artificial restrictions being put in place. Yep. That, you know, I mean, they're taking advantage of the tighter job market, you know,
plain and simple. It's the tighter job market, but also it's also 100% a response to they have more financial demands on them right now than they used to have. And when they didn't have those financial demands, they made a whole lot of real estate investments that they can't easily get out of. And I'm sorry, but the reality of the world these days, especially in tech, is nobody answers to themselves. They all answer to somebody that is who loaned them the money. And that person that gave them the money that said, hey, let's build a, you know, $1.5 billion campus in Silicon Valley is saying, well, we built it. Why aren't you there? You know, that's a different conversation, but unfortunately it's running afoul of HR policies, which is a whole nother issue.
Okay. I guess that cool. that defined it there.
Awesome.
Solved the problem.
Sorry. I mean, it's the problem of it is, I mean, like I said, we're having to put, you know, financial answering and reportability up against how do you keep your people happy? And while it might be a tough spot for companies, I mean, those of us that are sitting here as quote unquote employees, you know, and luckily I don't have this issue. This isn't a thing that I have, so I can't speak to it from experience, but you know, between the four of us, we all know lots and lots and lots of people that are running into this right now. You know, it's which matters more to you. And 2 years ago, it was the people. And this year, it's the finances.
It's interesting that in just the last 4 years, we've seen the pendulum swing so dramatically from one side to another. And that's not to say that the previous 6 years before, since the Great Recession, haven't been tumultuous as well. But, you know, in the last 4 years, we've seen companies bend over backwards and prove we can make a fully remote workforce work, or a majority remote workforce work. They got plenty of, you know, back in, hey, we'll help take care of you so that these assets don't become a nuisance to you type of thing. And then coming out of the early part of the pandemic, we get to, you know, the Great Resignation, or whatever you want to call it, where people started shuffling around pretty heavily and were able to demand some pretty big salaries, because in that time we started to really realize what our value is as employees and our ability to really be able to do we're making the money for these companies, and they had to bend over backwards to make sure that we were sticking with them through that whole period. And a lot of people working from home all of a sudden are like, let me reconsider the way I deal with my life. And that part of that is your job. And then somehow within about 6 months, we swung completely to the opposite side, where all of a sudden the employers have all of the power. They have the ability to just massively start laying people off and forcing people back into the office. And those two trends happening in parallel are pretty damning to what you just said, Jim, about it being so financially motivated, so focused on the bottom line, and, you know, capital isn't cheap right now, and all those types of things that we hear all the time. They're, you know, it's going to be interesting, because we're going to see, we've seen trends like this before. We're going to see, all of these good people getting jettisoned from these companies, forced out. And there's a good number of them that went out and started their own thing. They're starting new businesses. They're coming up with new ideas. They're solving problems that they wanted to solve with their previous employer, but maybe can't, you know, they're like, I couldn't get traction. I couldn't get it done. There's too much red tape. I'm just going to go do it now. And being able to do some new things that will result in innovation coming up in the next 10 years. And meanwhile, those bigger companies are focused on the financial bottom line, which always means they cut research, they cut innovation. And we're going to get into this situation where you've got the big companies are just going to sit on their laurels and try to milk what they've got and spend as little as possible. Meanwhile, I predict in 5-ish years, we're going to start seeing this new renaissance of really cool startups that's going to be a really, really fun experience to watch.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's, you know, there's the whole FAFO cycle of life that has become the internet meme of the last few years. But, I mean, you look at companies like VMware and VMware as begat to Broadcom. It's, you know, they're one of the ones that's driving the, you know, look, you're going to go to the office. You don't have a choice. One of you, please speak up and say, what was it, 50 miles?
50 miles.
If you're within 50 miles, you have to do it.
As the crow flies.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes.
Which is just wild talking to the guy in West Virginia, right? Like that 50 miles could take you hours to drive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or no, the 10, yeah.
I mean, it's definitely clear. It's just a matter right now of valuing money over people, you know, just full stop. You know, I think we're kind of beating a dead horse here. Hopefully it's just a pendulum and you've kind of gone from one extreme to the other in a relatively short period of time. But, I mean, if things aren't working with your current employer, you know, it's now the best time to be looking for another role. I don't know. You know, but maybe it's time to start, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? Stuffing the resume up, you know, things like certs, for example.
Certs, you say?
Something Jim knows real well.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's... Well, I mean, you know, again, if there's anything that I've got a shortage of, it's thoughts about things. And certs are one of those things that I've been thinking about here lately. You know, like, as I said earlier, did a certification exam this morning. That's my second this year and my third in the last, what, 3.5 months? Because I did two. I literally bookended Christmas with certs. I'm in a different place in my career, so I think it is different. But there's all kinds of reasons for certs. And the, you know, we are all, I hate to say it, white dudes of a certain age on this podcast. And there's a certain point where lots of people tail off on certifications. And I did this one, and I'll be straight up, the AWS Solutions Architect one, that is a pain in the ass of a cert. You know, there are those that I come into and I'm like, okay, this makes sense. I can do this. It's consumable, all that kind of stuff. This was like the cert that never ended.
In what sense? Like the depth, the breadth, the ridiculousness?
So this is my second time around for it. I did it the first time in 2018. So when I was leaving my state job, that was my cert in anger. I had no interest in AWS, no work relationship to AWS, no anything. But I was like, well, if I'm going to leave, cloud certs are hot, I'm going to go do it. So I went and did it expressly to get myself the heck out of that job. And taking it in 2018 and then taking it this year, I kid you not, the breadth of knowledge that you have to be not only conversant, but be able to know how to mash all the parts together is probably threefold in that time span. I mean, it was 80 hours of study material that I went through just the video training on A-Cloud Guru, which, you know, not a sponsor, but hey, if you want to, I'll advocate for you all day long. You know, it's good content, but it's just so much. And, you know, the solutions architect is a great idea of how to approach an exam, which is, you know, I'm not breaking NDAs or anything here because it's well known. But the whole idea is they give you a scenario. They give you 65 scenarios and say, here are all the aspects. Now, how are you going to get there? What parts are you going to mash together to make that scenario work? And, you know, for those of us that are bloggers, it's not unheard of for each question to be 400 or 500 words. And so you've got 2 hours and 10 minutes to get through 65 questions of that, 15 of which, as again, it's well known, are non-scored pre-feeder questions. And it's like, oh man, this one, it made my head hurt.
I feel it in my middle age.
It's nice to hear that it sounds like it really is about testing your understanding of your knowledge compared to, you know, I think of some of those older VMware certs where it's like, which sub-menu under navigation do you find this
or
option?
Min and max,
you know,
on like RAM specs? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. As someone who was an ESX or was a VCP, DCV, what?
It's like the 5X days, I want to say.
I was a 4, a 5, and a 6.
Oh, it was so much worse than the 2-3 days because they didn't have as much to test.
3 was terrible.
Well, the 4 was horrible. The four was like, yeah, what? It was all the, minimum and maximum.
That was the
peak. It took me two tries to do that one. Yeah. But I mean, you know, I like to think of myself as a good certification tester. Like, I'm like, well, you guys have all done certifications. So once you've done enough of them, you start to like really get how multiple choice tests work.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I can fly through these things. And now I don't know if it's age. I don't know if it's, you know, just this test, but it was like, oh, this stuff was hard. So it's at a certain point, and this is what I kind of wanted to kind of come to you guys. You know, I'm an architect. Joe, you're an architect. Brian, you're a marketer. Matt, you're a marketer. We've all evolved from being sysadmins, desktop support people, this kind of role, that kind of role, through all the different kind of companies. At what point does it not matter? Because I haven't decided that I'm there yet, but I'm open to the conversation. Let's put it that way.
I mean, for me, it was, when was it? I tried to recert on my VCP without really studying, really, and just kind of took some swings at it and failed miserably each time. Mm-hmm. That was probably about 4 or 5 years ago. I said, you know what, I'm kind of cool with this. I just don't do things at that level anymore. Where the one place where I am thinking about maybe going back and getting a cert, similar to you in some ways, which is, there's this new area I'm really interested in, and I kind of want to force myself to learn more about it and give myself, you know, I don't have the years of experience in cybersecurity. Let's get a certification that shows at least I know the base knowledge well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and to that point, and to kind of answer your question, Jim, I think it sort of comes down to, you know, when should you get a cert? Either it's that you need it, and that could be a matter of, you know what, your company says that you need it, or maybe you need it for promotion, job raise, whatever. Or Brian, to your point, it's something that you want to do. Early on, after I started taking them, I sort of flipped the narrative on it from treating them as proving what I know, instead as, this is a thing I want to learn. This is my learning path. Use the blueprint, use the study guides to let me learn these things. And then when I pass a test, cool. I actually learned all the things I need to learn in the right way. So very similar to you, Brian. You know, there's topics out there. And it's like, hey, you know what? Yeah, I want to learn more about that. Are there certs available? Are there blueprints available? And that's a fantastic way to get started. Would I do it in the hopes of, you know, I mean, at this point, I don't think any of us really need them to switch roles or anything per se, unless it's something super specialized. But if you're starting off, I don't know, they're probably not bad things.
Yeah, I personally go start with the exam guides. And normally when I look at a certification, it is from the stance of, do I really know this well enough for something that I work with regularly? Or if it's something that I don't know, am I even at a conversational level in all of the things that they have as part of this blueprint? And for me, honestly, things shifted a couple of years ago when I first got involved in actually helping to write the course that led to a certification and then helping to write the exam itself. That was a whole different level of educational enablement stuff that I had never seen or heard or thought about. Not that any of it is difficult, not that any of it's not really common sense, but the science of what actually goes into having a good exam that's testing people in the right ways, and it's actually doing something like Jim touted about the AWS cert, where you're really testing somebody's knowledge of how to put this together in the right way that is validated by people that are experts in the technology, not just people that are experts at writing an exam to test for correctness of, you know, how qualified are you to pick a you know, multiple choice answer sort of thing.
Are you good enough to avoid
so after that shift, I
pick the wrong answers that we make very likely to be right.
Yeah. And honestly, there's a decent number of people that can pass an exam because they're at a functional level for a lot of these things, and they can easily get multiple choice questions down to where they can take a 50-50 shot, you know, and a lot of people will pass an exam that way. We even know some people in the community that have always touted that if you beat the minimum score by, you know, a point or more, that you studied too hard, right? That was extra effort you didn't need to put into it. But
Speaking of that testing and roadshow, that was absolutely my experience with it. I studied exactly for 24 hours, and I beat it by, I think, 11 points on a 1,000-point scale.
So, pass is a pass, right? That's my big thing. I get to the point that it's the attainment of the knowledge, and it's really what are you trying to get out of the certification. Yeah, you made some great points. For people that are early on in their career that need to get some chops or some marks under their belt, or like Brian said, that you need to show that you have a base level of knowledge, and especially if that's for you to go try and get a job or a promotion, awesome for that. To me, for a lot of people, even through like the middle tiers of their careers, I say certifications are worth it. The cert, it's a piece of paper, but that's going to be one of the few times you're actually going to get your company to pay for training and hopefully even give you some time that's allocated to go train on that and have that be a function of your job for whatever portion of time that they deem is reasonable for you to go get that cert. So to me, that's the bigger value for a lot of people. It gives you a guideline, and it actually gives you some hopefully real company support behind getting it.
Yeah, Joe, you stole a little bit of my thunder there, but I am 100% for it that, you know, if you like my approach to certifications, like I said, I am probably nicely putting it late stage career in terms of like how this kind of stuff goes. And I'm at a point where I should not care, but there is one part of me that is, these are the things that I have to have because my company has to have them. So it behooves me to always make sure I keep those going. You know, Joe in your previous life, Matt in your current life, Veeam certifications are one of those things that it's like, okay, every single year I got to take care of this shit. And so I stay on top of that one, but the other ones are always, there's probably like if I sat down with a psychiatrist, a mental glitch of, I had to fight for training for so long in my career that the back door that I always found on how to get training was to say, well, I want this cert and it'll benefit us in ways A, B, and C. So now it's like, okay, so that's how I figured out how to get there. So I always use that as my, even now, you know, so I did this AWS one. My next one is going to be, I don't know anything about Azure. So, okay, I'm going to go to the AZ-900, which is their little baby cert. You know, it's like not 8 hours or something like that. But it gives me something at the end of the tunnel that I can say, okay, I at least know this much about it. I can at least be conversant. Joe's going to like wreck me for going to do this. I can see it coming right now.
I'll be your Huckleberry, man. I'm you might happen to know an Azure MVP that can help you out in some things. So, you know, not so silently judge you on your way through it and poke and prod you in the right directions.
As someone who's cared way too much about backing up things that involve the words Microsoft and 365 for way too long, I probably know more about Azure than I think I do. But I think it's very heavily weighted toward the Azure. I'm going to say Azure AD because I'm an old head, but I know that's not the name and, you know, but it's, you know, that's, but what it boils down to is it's for me at this point in my career, it's, I have the things that I have to do. And then there are the things that I want to do. I want to know more about it. And it gives me a way to artificially set a deadline. You know, it's like, okay, here's what I'm working towards. So I know I need to do it. But you know, there's different stages for it in different places. It contains
all those things that those of us with, I don't necessarily want to say ADHD, but people that sometimes need concrete goals and concrete guides. Certifications have all those, like Joe said. So yeah, definitely worthwhile. You know, your job role makes a big difference with it. Your stage of your career pivots are a lot easier. I think one of the things that I didn't do, but I definitely do recommend people who do get laid off, have been laid off for considerable time. There's a technology area you want to get into, a company you want to look attractive to. Go do what certs you can for free. You know, maybe even consider paying for those certifications that do require a cost, because it is an investment in you. It could be helpful, but it really, really, really depends on your situation and, you know, some of us that go through layoffs just don't have the mental bandwidth to deal with it. And that was part of my struggle through part of the time. Part of the time I just didn't want to do anything that resembled work for a while. So definitely some good thoughts there. I think we'll probably call that good at this point, because we touched off on a lot in a little over 30 minutes. So guys, it's always a pleasure to hang out with you. We definitely need to do this more often. Everybody out there, take care of yourself. Do what you need to do, both for yourself, your family, and for your career. Those have to come before any company, because as we discussed, they aren't always on your side. And things like certifications will be there for you. So take care, everyone, and we'll talk to you next time.